Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Oh, I went on a date and I ended up running into every bitch I know, I'm telling you. I ran into my sister, her husband. I ran into a former boss. I ran into a current coworker. I ran into an estranged cousin. All of this on like a third date with this person. And I seriously was like, I guess I know everyone in town. I also ran into other people I knew at a different date with this same person. We went to a concert. I ran into my best friend, her husband, her dad, who is like my dad's best friend. And so it was crazy. And then we ran into like my friends of friends who I'm like at parties with sometimes. And they were like, Lena, Lena. And I was like, oh my God. And I like forgot their names. These are people I've seen probably 50 times in the last like year. Like I see them quite frequently. I fucking forgot their names. So I was like, oh my God, it's so good to see you. Oh my God. I'll never bounce back from this. So luckily, we went to the farmer's market the next week.
And you said,
all these people's names.
And I can list off all their names.
Exactly.
I know my brother-in-law's name, I swear.
I swear.
Recovering Gleek presents...
Slay! A queer Buffy podcast. Hello, everyone. My name is Lena.
My name is Ian.
And welcome to Slay. A queer Buffy podcast. We are happy to have you. I know, literally.
That's really beautiful.
Who would you be in the acapella group? Oh, I already know. You'd be Ben Platt going, I got the magic. Like the one tenor they bring out for the big solo.
Okay. I was trying, I was very...
Anyway, I asked you a question, I immediately answered. My favorite kind of question.
It was you being like, first of all, the concept that there are archetypes in an acapella group beyond like percussionist and voice.
Mama, there literally are.
Well, there's like vocal parts. Like, yeah, I would be the tenor because that's my voice type.
Yeah, and then there's the bass and then there's the percussion.
Yes. Well, yes, of course. Yes. I'm not going to go into a choir and play the bass. I can't sing bass.
Period.
No.
So yeah, I figured it out for you.
And who would you be? The soprano?
Well, yeah, I'm the one woman in pentatonics.
Yeah. Actually, that's very true. Mm-hmm. I don't remember her name. Diva.
Pentatonics. I don't either, but she's holding it down. She's a diva.
I think about them a lot. Yeah. They're still like very successful. They're still doing very well for themselves.
Oh, literally.
But it's so interesting. Such a
Scott's
niche...
literally on Dancing with the Stars this season.
Scott literally... was at the Culture Awards. I saw his face in the audience.
Yeah, literally.
Scott literally played Lucas Gabriel's gay husband in an episode of High School Musical, the musical, the series.
Scott and his husband pretended like, or the Lost Culturistas Instagram said that was Matt and Bowen. that Scott funny. And his husband were Matt and Bowen.
But it's such a niche form of entertainment. And to think about the fact that pentatonics were... mainstream celebrities for a bit. Like, that's just such a bizarre thing to think back on.
No,
in 2012, at least like where I was living, you could ask any kid at a high school, have you heard of pentatonics? And like one out of five would say yes.
Yeah.
And that's insane for an a cappella group.
No, absolutely. The rise and fall of a cappella happened so fast, and pentatonics. I don't know.
And it was because of Ryan Murphy.
Exactly. Period.
I hope Scott Hoying wrote him a thank you note.
it's so funny, too. I mean, the thing is, too, a lot of their music, a lot of their audios, especially like on Instagram or TikTok, like go viral pretty consistently. I don't know. Like, I'm also like big into the indie scene. I love me some Fleet Foxes. Like, nobody knows the Fleet Foxes version of... the White Winter Hymnal. Everyone knows the pentatonics version and everyone loves it. Like, they make beautiful music.
Yeah. I remember when I was a Mormon missionary, the only music we were allowed to listen to We could listen to like classical music. We could listen to any music that was the Tabernacle Choir singing, or we could listen to any version of a song that could be found in the hymnal. And
I thought you were just going to tell me any acapella song.
We can listen to any
acapella is randomly
song.
Christian adjacent as well.
It is genuinely. But there were some Pentatonix Christmas songs that I was throwing ass to.
Remember, Crystal Savior was born on Christmas Day.
This is not in the Mormon hymnal, but like Christmas songs were a lot more lenient. The Pentatonix version of Mary, Did You Know?
Oh my God. Of course.
Oh my gosh. I would like pretend to exercise in the morning because we were supposed to exercise every morning. And usually what that meant for me is I would do like 10 sit-ups and then just lay on the ground for 20 minutes.
Oh, I mean, that's corpse pose. That's
corpse pose. Exactly. Yeah. I was centering myself for a successful day. I don't know, girl. I don't do yoga.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. But someone told me once about corpse pose that it's the hardest in all of yoga because a part of corpse pose, and I'm literally pulling this from like one yoga class ever, so maybe I should stop myself while I'm ahead. But to lay there, you have to be like okay with accept that death is going to come, and like you have to like kind of accept death and be okay with it. Like that's part of it. Oh. I'm pulling this out of my ass. Maybe cut that.
No, but and all the yogis before? Are blowing up our inbox.
Yeah, they're pissed.
I believe that that's the purpose of corpse pose. Is that the way that I do it when I take yoga classes?
No, you fall asleep.
I'm like, finally, a break. Finally, I accept that a nap is going to come.
Every
Thank
single
goodness.
Yoga class I've ever taken in my life, every time we get to corpse pose, I hear like three people snoring.
Yes.
I think I've probably fallen asleep a few times, but it's so nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. I love a good crow's pose.
Yeah, me too. And but you would listen to Pentatonix?
I listen to Pentatonix. I listen to Mary, Did You Know? And Little Drummer Boy. Yo, ooh, their Little Drummer Boy is crazy. They have a bridge that like, oh, and the next thing comes up, oh, and they just keep building the chord.
I love.
It was really like blowing my mind.
I love that. And this episode is brought to you by Pentatonix. Everyone vote for Scott when you watch Dancing with the Stars this year.
Oh, he's one of the stars.
That's what I said,
know what
Mama.
I thought when you said he's on Dancing with the Stars. I was like, well, of course he always is. I think I was thinking of Derek Huff. I'm not joking.
You're kidding.
They occupy a similar space in my brain.
That's okay. The Mormon in me is so upset that you said that.
The Huffs did not mean anything to me growing up.
Oh, the Huffs mean, I can't even get into it how much the Huffs mean to me. And I mean that in a negative way.
Oh,
the Huffs be making me mad for no reason.
See, my opinion of the Huffs is, I'm not kidding, I didn't know what Derek Huff looked like. Until, not to bring it back to this show, he had a recurring role on season 3 of High School Musical, the musical, the series.
That's so funny. Okay, did you not watch?
No, I don't watch Dancing with the Stars, which I actually might start this year because, am I actually thinking of Robert Irwin? I think I am.
Robert Irwin's on?
No, yeah, but I felt like there was another celebrity that I was really excited about, but maybe it's literally just Robert Irwin. But
just Robert Irwin. Bro, when Bindi Irwin was on that show, that was the best season, and she was with Derek Huff.
Hey, and then I know that Julianne Huff really ate down when she was Sandy in Grease.
Yeah.
I saw the scene at the dance. She's dancing for her life.
Oh, she's dancing for her
life. The category
was
dance or die, and she said, I'm not about to corpse pose and accept that death will come for me right
now.
I'm gonna dance.
I love that. Something about the Huffs makes me mad in a way that I can't really explain at all, but they make me mad. There is something about like a successful Utah person that makes me angry in general. Because it's so interesting. I'm watching Real Housewives of Salt Lake City right now. I have never seen it before, and it's the most glorious television show of all time. I literally can't even tell you. But I mean, in my mind and growing up here, and maybe even growing up in my small town, I have like a very, and I mean, I didn't grow up in Salt Lake, and I didn't grow up in like Provo or like in my mind, richer parts of Utah. So in my mind, I'm like, Utah is nothing. Like, no one who's from here can ever be anything and can never succeed at all. When, like, even watching, like, that show and seeing, you know, plenty of success and, like, Dancing with the Stars in general, like, every American person you can probably guess is from Utah. That's just how it is there. Anyway. So it is a bit of a mind fuck to see, like, very rich, very successful Utah people, because I'm like, oh my god, I had, like, a really specific view of who someone from Utah is like, and you are not fitting into what my childhood brain is, like, trying to process, yeah, too.
It was like, I did not think that this was an option for me,
yeah,
and now I feel like I'm seeing through you that it was an option, and yeah, I just never knew, and now I'm sad that I didn't get, like, I didn't.
Like, why didn't my parents put me in ballroom, I guess? I don't know. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not entirely sure. And even just their vibe in general is, like, not my favorite vibe. And Julianne Hough did blackface one time, and I think I, like, hold that over her head hugely. Did you see that?
No, as I told you, I knew nothing about her.
You know nothing about them. You're right.
I know. I still, to this day, I know she's, like, blonde. I don't know if you put, like, 10 blonde white women in front of me and one
you
of them
was Julianne Hough. Was Jules Hough.
I'm not confident that I could tell you which one was Julianne
That's
Hough.
So funny, because we were also, I was, we were, my family, we were obsessed with the acapella TV show that ran for two or three seasons.
The Sing Off,
obviously. And then everyone who was anyone was watching So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Like, and I still keep up with Dancing with the Stars. I can't help it.
I might start. I like the idea of the whole nation watching a reality show together and voting.
Yeah, it's cute.
It's the American Idol in me. I need that feeling of community again.
And it is cute. I think I do think over the last couple of years, especially, like, so many of the pros genuinely date and marry the stars on the show. Mm-hmm. The shipping wars happens crazy because it is, you know, it happens all the time. And, like, these dancers are also hooking up with the stars. And because social media is, like, a part of it now too, like, I, like, fall for the traps every time. And it pisses me off. Like, one of the bachelorettes, I think Jen, gosh, I always forget their names and I'm so sorry. It doesn't matter to you. Why do I care? But one of the bachelorettes, she was maybe dating her dance partner, but, like, I mostly felt just really, like, strung along and, like, kind of like Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson. They go crazy with the, you know, to get you to vote for them as well. I think they want you to think they're dating. And so it's, like, kind of a frustrating watch sometimes. And in a way that I, you know, the romantic in me falls for that shit every time.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Tell us all this time. PRS time. Do you remember... In the classic 2012, maybe, movie What to Expect When You're Expecting, that the Cameron Diaz, Matthew Morrison plot is that they met on Dancing with the Stars, basically, and fell in love.
Oh, sure.
And she got pregnant. He's, like, one of the dancers on Dancing with the Stars, and
oh my
she's,
God,
like, a
I
famous
have a
fitness coach.
Yes.
Coach, pardon me. And she was on the last season and won it, and now she's pregnant with his baby.
Yeah. And it totally happens.
Hey.
That was our Dancing with the Stars corner. I hope you do tune in.
Off of Dancing with the Stars, let's talk about our star, Miss
Buffy Summers.
Of course. We're here to talk about Inca Mummy Girls, season 2, episode 4, of course.
Of course. I've been waiting for this one. Turn it up. Do you want to hear some slacks before we give away our feelings about this episode? Or do you want to tell me a little bit how you felt about this episode?
No, I want to hear slacks.
Okay. That's what I thought. Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's time for the slacks.
Inca Mummy Girl is the 4th episode of the 2nd season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the 16th episode in the series overall. Written by Matt Keen and Joe Rankinmeyer. They've only written 2 episodes, and this is their 2nd one. The first one they wrote, I won't make you guess. I'll tell you right now, The Pack.
Oh, banger
yeah,
episode.
Yeah, obviously. And then directed by Ellen S. Pressman. And the other episode that she has directed was Puppet Show. Okay. It was originally broadcast October 6th, 1997 on the WB Network. Okay, so this episode is kind of based on a mummy that was found the year prior. Mummy Juanita, also known as the Lady of Ambato. It was a well-preserved frozen body of a girl from the Inca Empire who was killed as a human sacrifice to the Inca gods, probably between 1440 and 1480, and she was approximately 12 to 15 years old. She was discovered on a dormant volcano, Mount Ambato, in southern Peru in 1995, or I guess 2 years before, excuse me. And they also called her the Ice Maiden, the Ice Princess, but, you know, they found this body in 1995, and it was, like, incredibly well-preserved because she was frozen. And then they brought her all around. That's kind of the thing with mummies. They get carted around and showed.
Well, it's like traveling exhibits. It's like when I was a kid and Titanic was all the rage because of James Cameron.
Of course.
There was a touring Titanic exhibit that came to a museum in my hometown and changed the fabric of my being.
Of course.
The incredible thing I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. She was in a part of a traveling exhibit for a few years after that. She's back in Peru, but she's been all over the world and was a huge discovery in the 90s. So this is kind of based on her loosely. Something about that always just makes me feel so sad. I don't know. And this is just my personal opinion. Like, obviously, this is for science. Like, this is huge. Like, that, you know, she can be preserved this way. Like, that's huge. I understand people want to see that. But something about, you know, her being just a little girl just makes me a little sad. And something about, dead bodies in general kind of makes me upset. I don't know. So that's the vibe that I'm giving right now. So,
you know, what you would find very fascinating?
Mm.
Little musical called Dead Outlaw.
Oh my God, Dead Outlaw. Yeah.
That's literally it. So Dead Outlaw, for those of you who don't know, is about Elmer McCurdy, who, similar story. Mm-hmm. He was an outlaw who got preserved. His body got preserved. And then it was toured around. It was at carnivals. Yeah. It was in wax museums. It was used as sideshow attractions.
Yeah.
And then its final place before they buried it was as a prop in a haunted house ride.
Oh my God.
And the musical Dead Outlaw is about Elmer McCurdy's life for the first half. And then once he dies, it's about what happened to his body and all the people that came in contact with his body until his burial. And one of the big themes of Dead Outlaw is who owns your story.
Yeah.
And our relationship with death and how, what does it mean to respect the dead? Mm-hmm. And how once you die, you don't really have any control of what becomes of your legacy, and anyone else can just kind of use your legacy for their own means. And I loved that show.
Yeah, I really liked to see it.
I was so sad that it closed.
Yeah.
It's really fantastic.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, you get me. But that's the vibe that I'm giving. That kind of stuff kind of makes me just extra sad. But that makes sense. Okay, jumping right to it. Let's combine this with who's playing at the Bronze, because we've got a big one at the Bronze tonight!
Who's playing at the Bronze?
Bro, this is Dingo Ate My Baby.
Oh!
Dingo Ate My Baby is Buffy's own. This is an in-universe Buffy band, but all the music is performed by the band Four Star Mary. So shout out to Four Star Mary. They write all the songs, they write all the music, and then they have actors pretend to do it for them. So shout out to them. But the band's name is in reference to the woman in the 80s who exclaimed that a dingo ate her baby, and no one believed her, so she was tried for murder. Then turned out they found her baby's clothes near a dingo den, so they dropped the murder charges. How sad is that? I've read about that today. I literally didn't know anything about that.
No, that's also an incredibly sad story.
Yeah, what the heck is happening today on this day?
it became like
everything's making me sad.
As evidenced by this episode, it became essentially a pre-internet meme where everyone was like, haha, dingoes ate my baby, remember how crazy that was? And then at the end of the day, she was
like, that was a baby
truth.
That died.
No,
I know. So shout out to me being sad on this day. I would love to, I mean, this is hardly a part of the Slacks. I'm like, when do I bring this up? I wanted to bring this up during the Slacks, but we can bring it up later. There are two slurs in this episode that I want to point.
There are two slurs, you're correct.
But there are, but there's a like mountain, a plethora of things that are unsavory.
Just like cultural insensitivity, yeah.
So much cultural insensitivity in this episode, but I do want to, I need to make people, because I feel like some people don't even know that these two are slurs. Mm-hmm. I just want to make people aware this episode is a fucking cesspool of insensitivity to cultures, and these two slurs are no exception. We have the G slur and the E slur in here. The G slur is obviously, not obviously, some people don't know, but it is important, is, you know, a slur used against the Romani people. You heard it in the episode. Stop saying it.
So Buffy says, basically, she's talking about how Ampata had, like, her freedom taken away from her. Mm-hmm. And she says, essentially, she got ripped off.
Yeah.
The word that she uses, obviously, is not ripped off.
Yeah.
That is slang that was very prevalent when we were growing up, that is short for a derogatory name towards the Romani people.
Yes.
And it's also fulfilling a harmful stereotype that Romani people are thieves.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you. You said that in a better way than I did. So thank you. And the other one is a slur that people use for Inuit people, and stop that. Mm-hmm. So that's happening. And this whole episode is just a cesspool of culture and insensitivity. And frankly, hearing that it was written by the people who wrote the pack, I'm not surprised. Anyway, okay. Let me tell you about the other names for this episode, the international titles. Most of them are some version of Inca Mummy Girl, Inca Mummy, some type Inca Mummy Princess, The Secret of the Mummy, but a few that are a little different. Truly, they're all pretty much Inca Mummy or The Mummy, but the Swedish title is Mom's Favorite Mummy. Which, like,
who's mom?
Who's mom? Like, we only see Joyce for like literally a second. Is that the mom?
But Joyce does speak positively about Ampata.
No, she thinks Ampata is such a sweet girl. She's like, oh, Ampata, you look so beautiful. She really belongs here.
You're my favorite mummy.
You're my favorite mummy. And so maybe it's that. Isn't that so funny?
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, those are your slacks.
Wow, yay!
Yeah. A fun one. Two things that made me sad and two other things that made me also sad. I hate slurs. Oh, I also have to shout out.
Oh, wait, you didn't shout out. I got two slacks for you. You continue.
We meet two huge characters in this episode. We meet Jonathan.
Jonathan is unnamed. Jonathan is the one that's like sitting alone. And then Ampata's like, hey,
let's make
what's
out.
What's up? Like, let's kiss. And he's like, aren't you here with Xander? And she says, does it look like I'm here with Xander? That's Jonathan, played by Emmy Award winner Danny Strong.
Mm-hmm.
And he is unnamed in this episode, but it is not the last you will see of him.
Exactly. Shout out to Jonathan. And then we also meet Osman. You're the lead guitarist. You could get any chick you want. He's the one who says the E slur. You'll remember him, the redhead. His name is Oz, and he's played by Seth Green. So every time I talk about Bruce Seth Green, no relation, I'm relating to Seth Green. I love Oz.
I'm glad that Seth Green finally, he was ready to step in front of the camera. He worked behind the scenes on Buffy a lot.
Exactly.
He said, I'm actually ready to get in front of that camera, knock the Bruce off my name, and show these people what I can really do.
Exactly. He's got a stage name and a backstage name.
Exactly.
I love Oz, and I'm so glad he's finally here.
Daniel Osborne. We got Drew and Spike last episode. Mm-hmm. We get Jonathan and Oz this episode. Four incredibly pivotal and iconic characters in the Buffyverse.
Mm-hmm.
All within a span of two episodes.
We are eating good these two episodes.
And that is like Inca Mummy Girl is an episode that is rarely discussed in the Buffy fandom. It is very much no one really cares about it. If it is discussed, it is discussed. People are like discussing the insensitivities in it.
Exactly.
But I always remember this episode because it is the introduction of these two dudes. And
it's so funny, too, the way they introduce Oz. They're like, Oz, you are such a hot commodity. These bitches love you. You could have any girl you want.
Hey.
And he wants our girl. I love that. I love Oz. I really do. I have such a special, he holds such a special place in my heart. I also have to shout out a little cameo role. The bodyguard is played by,
of course,
Gil Birmingham, who also stars in the Twilight movies. He plays Billy Black. I saw him and I was like, oh my God, Billy Black is in this?
Yeah.
And also, shout out to him. He is handsome as fuck in this.
No, he's very good looking.
He is very good looking. He's very good looking in general. And then also, Umpata, the Inca princess, is played by Araceli. And she's also Gorgina. It's
literally most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Oh my God,
took my breath away.
Holy cow.
She is like the hot, that like so hot, so beautiful that you would cast her as your, like, and I don't mean this to sound, you'd cast her as like your dead wife in a movie where there's a dead wife montage. She is so goddamn drop dead gorgeous. You know what I'm talking about? She's that level of beauty.
I'm gonna start describing people like that.
When she is.
You have dead wife in a movie good looks.
No, because that's the thing, is they always cast those roles as like the most gorgeous woman you've ever seen. Yeah. So it, like, in the rom-com, it always, like, you know, we're watching the home videos, we're watching the wedding videos. It always makes everyone cry because this woman is so beautiful and how could we lose her? Mm-hmm. And this woman is that gorgeous.
Yeah.
My God.
Hey, and those are your slacks, baby.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for listening to my slacks.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Alright, you ready to take a trip down memory lane of what happened in Inca Mummy Girl?
I actually need one, please.
Okay, this is like kind of messy. We're gonna see how it goes. It's way too long. Alright. Previously, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The Summers foreign exchange student isn't just from a different culture, but a different time. Umpata's just a regular teenage girl from the Incan Empire who was sacrificed against her will to save her people, mummified and reanimated with a boy's wardrobe and a killer skincare routine. To keep her youthful glow, she has to give someone the kiss of death every few hours. Ignorant of her mummified origin, Xander and Umpata begin a flirtation. Willow is hurt, but decides to take the high road and encourages Xander to take Umpata to Sunnydale's cultural appropriation dance. Elsewhere, Giles and Buffy put together the pieces of Umpata's fake identity after finding the corpse of the real foreign exchange student in her luggage. As her mummy psoriasis sets in, Umpata goes to death kiss Willow, gay, but Xander steps in to save her. Umpata then turns back into a mummy because Xander held off her kiss for long enough, or she hesitated too long because she's in love with him. I don't really know. It wasn't clear to me. With Umpata gone, Buffy feels bad for her as a fellow teen girl whose life was taken from her by forces out of her control. Mm-hmm. And that's Inca Mummy Girl.
I think it was probably both.
It's probably, that whole sequence is confusing to me because I was kind of like, she's been a mummy since the Incan Empire.
Yeah.
So why should I believe that she's gone because she's a mummy again? Like, obviously, I recognize that the mummy, like, broke. But I still, that's not enough for me to think that she can't reassemble herself and come back to life.
I hear that. I was thinking that because the shield was broken, that was like the thing that was like animating her.
But the shield breaking is what animated, like the shield being put together is what was keeping her as a mummy. And the second, that little punk-ass Rodney, who I forgot to mention in this, by the way. Oops.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't mention him.
Little punk-ass Rodney, he climbs into a museum with zero security, zero glass on anything, zero alarms.
And no teacher's eyes on him at all. They know he's a punk.
And he just fucks around in the mummy sarcophagus. I don't know if it's called a sarcophagus, actually. He fucks around in the mummy's coffin.
Yeah.
Takes this ancient Incan artifact and just shatters it.
See them?
But Rodney, that's what reanimates her.
You're making me mad. Yeah.
I don't, like, so yeah. In my mind.
Oh, yeah, that she totally could come back to life.
But she's still coming back. I don't buy that she's gone. I mean, obviously, I know she's gone. We never see her again. But that's why that final scene is very confusing to me. It's not super clear if she is, like, trying to kiss Xander, but then she's like, oh, my gosh, I'm in love with him. I can't bring myself to do this.
I wonder if a part of the curse is, like, if the shield is broken, she's got, like, one shot. And if she, like, becomes mummy again.
One shot, one opportunity.
My mind is,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, like, keep a balloon up. And
yeah,
if you can't,
it's like,
keep that shit up.
Once mummy sets back in, like, it's over.
It's over. Yeah, but you've got one shot, one shot.
I can buy that.
I mean, I don't know. She, like, wasn't super forthcoming about
Yeah, she didn't tell them this is how you kill me, which is really insensitive of her.
I know. Why didn't she do that?
She should have said, okay,
I have questions.
Jigs up. The gig's up. I'm a mummy. You all know. Yeah. So here's a step-by-step instruction of how you would kill me.
Yeah.
It was just,
and she, like, wasn't,
very,
like, truly a villain. So she didn't, like, have, like, a villain, like, monologue at the end to tell me what's up. Mm-hmm.
I also was thinking, I was like, she has to keep kissing people to look young and beautiful.
Yeah.
But I didn't think she had to keep kissing people to stay alive.
I thought,
because when she kisses the real Impata, the actual foreign exchange student, and kills him and then takes
his
place,
she was straight up
she's
mummy.
She's fully a mummy.
But, I mean, she probably kissed Rodney.
She did kiss Rodney.
Yeah.
But she still is fully a mummy there. Like, I don't...
Hmm. But it probably was
the,
like...
The laws of this curse are really confusing.
Yeah, really confusing. I wonder how long it took her to get from, and how did she know to get to the bus stop?
She also knew his name was Impata. Well, actually, I do have an answer for this.
Okay, what?
She says when they remark that her English is very strong, and they ask if she's ever been to the U.S. before, she says, I've toured.
Right.
I've been to Boston, New York, Atlanta, and it's a funny joke because literally her exhibit toured. But someone says something about, like, did you get a lot of practice talking? And she says, no, but I got a lot of practice listening.
So she's somehow, like, cognizant of what's going on.
Yes. And they were talking next to her coffin about how Buffy had to get Impata from the bus station.
I'm telling you, that is hell.
Oh, no, it's terrible. That's,
like, not that she's
possible.
Not even asleep.
I would
she's
so much rather be dead.
Oh, my God. Seriously. Yeah. No.
Terrible.
Awful.
So I hope for her sake that she did die at the end.
She's listening to these idiot kids talk about the bus stop. My God. Yeah. Make me mad.
No,
let
it's
that
really
little girl
dreadful.
Rest. Okay. So that makes sense. So she knows who to look for.
Yeah. But I still don't understand why that killed her at the end. In my mind, she would still be alive, just would look like a mummy. But I hope for her sake that it did kill her, because the alternative of her being a mummy and just listening to everything again is awful.
Awful. God, awful.
Inca Mummy Girl, how do you like this episode?
Let her rest. Okay, listen. Guess what?
What?
I don't like this episode. We found one.
Hey.
There are parts of this episode that I enjoy. I think, like, the parallel between Impata and Buffy is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm probably not going to revisit this episode for a while. It's not mine. Hey. It's not my episode. It's also, like we said earlier, it's just an absolute minefield of cultural insensitivity, cultural appropriation, all the shit. It's really not fun to watch personally, but there are parts of it that I like. Obviously, I think Impata as a character is interesting I thought it was sweet to see like Xander in a new light, but this isn't my favorite episode. I don't like it. What about you? Okay.
So, first of all, I want to say the name Ampata is not a real name. People do not have that name. But, like you said, this is inspired by Juanita, I don't remember what the rest of that name was, but she was found on the volcano of Ampato. And so her name is a shout out to
the girl
that she's based on. Anyways, so I have only seen this episode once when I first watched Buffy. I never ever revisited it. And I have heard nothing but bad things about it for years. I have heard people list this as like bottom five of the whole series.
Oh, sure.
Just like people really, really do not like this episode, saying like it's not worth revisiting at all, et cetera, et cetera. And so my expectations were on the floor when I went to watch this. And the first time I watched it, I had a good time.
I loved it. No, that's great.
I liked it. And then after I like knew what the episode was because I'd rewatched it, when I did my second watch, because I, you know, we tend to watch the episodes twice before recording. When I did the second watch, I was like, okay, I see. It's not like a very strong episode.
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would.
Hey, that's the thing with expectations. When they're on the ground, it's not hard to exceed them.
Obviously, there's a lot of stuff about this episode that is not great.
Yeah.
And then even beyond the insensitive stuff, there's stuff just like, I don't really understand why or how she died. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
There's just some narrative stuff that doesn't really click for me. But I find, like you mentioned, I find the parallel between Ampata and Buffy really compelling. I like when Buffy takes a universal monster and does a fun spin on them.
Yeah.
You know, 2 weeks ago we got Frankenstein, but what if Frankenstein was like a teen boy who had his life taken from him?
Yeah.
And now we're doing Imhotep from The Mummy.
Yeah.
But what if in a similar way, like instead of The Mummy being this evil force, what if The Mummy was some girl
who was a chosen one.
Yeah, that was much like Buffy, had her life stolen from her. And literally all she wants, she does not want to live forever. She does not want power. She wants to have a crush. Like, that's her main thing.
Exactly.
Is she just keeps saying, I just want to fall in love. Like, she just wants this human experience that everyone else has been granted, that she got stolen from her because a bunch of dudes in her civilization decided that she was the one that had to be sacrificed. I think that's really compelling.
I agree.
I had some laughs in this episode. Mm. I love the Cordelia like E-plot. It's really like three scenes, but I love the joke of Cordelia gets a foreign exchange student, because the whole bit with this episode is it's cultural exchange week. Like, everyone's getting exchange students, and Cordelia gets this exchange student from Sweden that she is like, I can't deal with this guy. Like, he doesn't understand anything I say. And she keeps being Cordelia, speaking to him.
Yeah.
So insensitively speaking to him as if he is like the way that you talk to a dog, like one of your pets. And then the reveal in the final scene with Sven, where he's talking to her friend and he speaks perfect English. And basically you find out the reason that he wasn't responding to Cordelia is because he thinks that she doesn't understand English because her English is so poor when she talks to him.
What good was this whole experience for me? He's like, I don't even get to speak.
So you see, he's like, I came here to like learn about American culture and improve my English. And yet like the girl I'm with talks in a language I've never even heard before. I thought that was a very fun reversal.
Yeah.
There's stuff about this episode that I like. And I certainly am not like going to bat thinking it's a great episode. But I think it has redeeming qualities and I had a good time watching it.
I like that. No, I agree. I think like even these episodes that I like, I'm not like 100% enjoying. Like, I still like am finding good stuff in it. Like, I totally agree with you. I think the stuff with Buffy and the Inca Princess are like, is like great. And I also love the Willow stuff. And the Willow stuff is like pretty, like she's like mostly in the background of what's going on. But I think that like makes it so powerful to me. Like, she is witnessing Xander straight up talk about her and be like, I literally would never kiss that girl in my life. And like seeing him also fall in love with this girl. She says something I could wait for him to date every other girl, or I could start living my life. And Buffy's like, I think that's great. And she's like, well, I haven't decided yet. Like, I love that part so much. And to watch her decide that, you know, she's going to put herself first and like cut her losses with that, I think is so lovely. And then to see that there are people out here who desire her is like so lovely. And I just think in my mind, I've never understood people who, and it's okay if you do, and I would love someone to like tell me if they do. I've never understood people shipping Xander and Willow to me personally. And I love a friends to lovers like anyone else. But especially with him straight up showing not only just not, he doesn't think about her like that, but he has thought about it and he's decided not to pursue her like that on purpose. It's hard to come back from that. And I would hate to see someone who is so special to me, this girl, be someone's second choice like that. So I'm glad to see them give her someone else to choose her and pick her. And I think that, you know, we can all take a page out of Willow's book. Let's wait for people who are going to pick us. Like, so I shout out to Oz. I love the Willow stuff in this episode.
I agree. And I think Willow v. Xander is very interesting in this episode because they are both in they're both in similar situations as in Willow is in a situation that Xander has been in for a while.
Yeah.
And the way they handle it is so interesting.
Yeah.
You know, Xander was pining after Buffy all of season one. And then at the end of season one, he got a definitive, I'm not interested from Buffy. Willow has been pining after Xander the whole show so far. And she now in this episode has heard a definitive from Xander, I'm not interested in Willow. And the way that Xander has been handling it since then, it's especially egregious in this episode. The like last three, he maybe like made a comment or two. But this episode, just with Ampata, they know there is going to be a boy, that they're having a male exchange student. Yeah. And then obviously it ends up being a female because the mummy killed the real Ampata and replaced him. But when Xander knows that like a teenage boy is going to be living with Buffy, he keeps making all these like Xander comments about like, oh, well, you better watch out for him and be careful around him and blah, blah, blah. And it's coming from a place of he's extremely jealous and is trying to like drive a wedge between them. And then what Xander is fearing actually happens to Willow, which is the exchange student arrives and she's incredibly interested in Xander and Xander's incredibly interested in her. Mm-hmm. And how Willow handles it is like, okay, well, like you said, I want to be with someone who's going to choose me. So she encourages Xander to pursue it.
Yeah.
And I think that just shows the level of maturity between these two characters and the differences there.
Yeah, literally.
And I wish I could say most of the time with Xander, I do feel like the writers are kind of critiquing teen boys by the way he acts, or at least, and you know, a lot of the times it's a playful critique, but like they are critiquing. But this episode, I feel like based on how it ends with Buffy and Xander having a conversation where Buffy mentions how she feels bad for Ampata because she knows what that's like. And she, when she found out that she had to die in Prophecy Girl, she was not, you know, thinking of helping others either. Like that was not her first instinct either. And Xander says, yes, but ultimately you decided to do the right thing. And Buffy says, yes, and I had you to bring me back. And they have a moment that feels sexual tension-y right then.
Sure.
And I feel, and this is pure conjecture on my part, but I feel like the writers...
Don't say it.
And maybe one particular showrunner who is living out his self-insert fantasy through this character is trying to set up Buffy Xander. Yeah. And be like, ultimately, he's going to win her over. And we are introducing Oz... So that everyone can get their happy ending and Buffy Xander can get together and the fans won't feel bad for Willow because she has her own boyfriend elsewhere.
Yeah.
I just like, I really loved, I had no issue with Xander having an unrequited crush on Buffy in season one. I really loved her turning him down and him like being a little wuss about it, but then ultimately helping her in the end. But then I don't like that now he like continues to hold on to those feelings, and then it feels like the writer's plan is to ultimately reward him for that. You like to refuse to move on, you're actually going to get rewarded and you're going to wear her down.
Yeah, that ain't right. That's so funny. I didn't get that at all.
Maybe that's just in my brain.
No, I mean, I think you're probably right. And I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility of what was going on in the writer's room, I'm sure, knowing what I know. But Xander's not my guy. And I love Buffy so much that I'm like, I don't think anyone's good enough for her. So that's my daughter. You know what I mean? So I wasn't even thinking about that at all. That's mom's favorite mummy. Slayer. Exactly. That's mama's favorite slayer. So, yeah. But no, now that you say it, I can totally see. And I mean, that scene with them is sweet. It is very, very, very sweet. Like even, you know, him saying like, other than you, like my taste in girls has like only proved to be like really, really poor. I totally see the sweetness there. But I was not looking for tension because my brain could never go there.
Yeah, it felt like a seed planting to me.
Yeah, no, I totally see what you're saying.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
I like have no issue with the Empata Xander dynamic. Yeah. I think it's fun.
No, absolutely.
And I think it's fun, whereas in Teacher's Pet, like she had nefarious purposes in mind with him. But I like in this episode that like, no, Empata is being genuine. She actually is interested in Xander. And yes, she's killing people and that's bad. Yeah. But like, she's killing people because she wants to date Xander.
Yeah,
and she
she's
can't
not killing
turn
people.
Back into
she's
a mummy.
Killing boys.
Boo. She's only killing boys because she won't go gay.
No, and that was wrong.
Like, you saw how much she hesitated to kiss Willow.
I know. Come on. I was so excited when she went to kiss Buffy. I was like, come on, kiss her. Come on.
She'll be fine.
Oh my god. No, I mean, even that moment where she's about to kiss Jonathan, but she doesn't, thank God. And, you know, she, like, Xander finds her and she's so emotional. And she's like, you know, that's also the thing. It's the pushing daisies of it all. It's like, they can't kiss because one of them will die if they kiss. Like, she cannot pursue this love. And, like, this actress, she's doing a damn good job. She's really killing it. And she's crying and watching Xander say, like, are these happy tears or are these like disgusted tears? Like I thought that scene was gorgeous. Like the warm light behind, I was gagged. It was beautiful. It was like clinch cover romance novel shit. I thought it was so beautiful. And watching her cry, oh my God. I loved Xander,
like you said, having no context for why she's crying.
Yeah.
And then trying to comfort her by saying, she says, Xander, I have a secret. And him trying to like make her feel better and cut the tension goes, oh, I know. And if you tell me, you'll have to kill me. And then she starts sobbing even harder. Yeah. And he goes, okay. Bad joke.
No, I thought that scene was gorgeous. Like so beautiful. And I mean, that's also the thing is, this girl is just like Buffy. Like she just wants to be a normal girl. And there are circumstances that keep her, even now, you know, however many years after this, you know, the Incan Empire, she still can't be a normal girl. And like the devastation that she feels. Oh my gosh. I really feel for this girl.
Yeah. Do you think Billy Black, do you think he was immortalized and is from the Incan Empire? Or do you think it's like a watcher scenario?
Yeah, it's a watcher scenario.
Like, they're called. Okay.
I think it's called. I think that guy is from now.
Got
and
it.
He goes around, he goes along with her. I mean, that's what I thought. I'm not sure though.
That is maybe less insensitive because Billy Black is in no way Peruvian.
No, yeah.
He's very much from North America.
Yeah.
That also makes more sense because, like, where would he have been this whole time?
I assume that he.
Yeah. He's like one of the museum workers. They just like constantly have one of the museum workers is that generation's person who is going to keep the mummy from coming back to life.
Yeah.
Where the fuck was he when Rodney was in there? He pops up after Rodney breaks the seal. Billy Black.
He was on his lunch break.
He's on his lunch break. Classic. He was off as a, he was running around as a werewolf.
Yeah.
It was a full moon that night.
It was a full moon that night.
I said, sorry.
Oh my God.
I was out with my son and his friends running through the woods.
Literally. And his, weird, his other friend and her weird boyfriend. I love Twilight. God, I love Twilight. I love that Billy Black. He is genuinely, that actor is handsome. My God.
Yeah.
When Impata kissed him, I was like, oh!
I forgot that happened. Here's my other quote. Here's my other qualm with this episode.
Mm.
So Billy Black, like his whole calling, I like how we're calling him Billy Black. Gil Birmingham, but who will be known as Billy Black.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Black's like whole purpose in life is to keep the seal from getting broken.
Yeah,
and then if the seal gets broken, to stop this girl from killing people. Rodney, once again, little fuckface Rodney, walks into the museum. Not a guard in sight, not a Billy Black in sight.
No, I know.
Walks on over to the coffin. No alarms, no glass over the coffin.
No
picks
glass.
Picks up the seal, no problem, shatters it. Where were you, Billy Black? And then Billy Black is like, oh, fuck, I was on my lunch break. I was off being a werewolf. I actually need to lock in. He starts chasing Ampata.
Mm-hmm.
She is in the body, which, like, I understand she's a supernatural being. But he, this is his whole purpose. He's been training his whole life.
Yeah.
She is, like, a 16-year-old.
She's a 16-year-old girl.
He has been training his whole life. This is his only purpose. The first time he even tries to stop her, it's not even like they fight for 30 seconds and she gets the upper hand. I'm not kidding. He goes to hit her. She knocks the hit away, puts him in a headlock, kisses him, he's dead. What was the point of you, Billy Black? You were the worst at this job. You were so incredibly bad. You couldn't have done a worse job if you'd broken the seal yourself.
It's giving Watcher's Council, truly, where it's like, I wonder if it was, you know, it's his father before him, his father before him, his father before him. And along the way, it kind of, they kind of drop the ball about like training.
Yeah, because they're like, she's been in that thing for thousands of years. Like, she ain't coming out.
No.
Like, this is a formality at this point.
And you know what? She is at least semi-combat trained. Like, she has some strength to her. Like, you know. And they just didn't. That was an oversight on their part. So they totally. So he's like, he totally forgot to, like, step up his game.
Yeah.
He's like, shit, I should have been studying.
I mean, like, in fairness, if I was touring the country with an exhibit of a mummy and I'd been touring the country for like 10 years and the mummy had never done anything, I would be like, what are the odds that something's going to happen?
Oh, my God, totally. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to go watch YouTube in the bathroom on my phone. Like, the museum is closed.
Sure, this weird brace face kid was fully picking paint flakes off one of the ancient masks, but he'll be fine. He's not going to do anything crazy.
I can't believe they brought his ass even on the field trip. He can't keep his hands to himself.
No. He was growling at the other kids. Don't bring him into a museum.
He was growling at the other kids. And here's Willow again having so much empathy for these little brats.
I did really love that character beat.
Yeah.
That, like, Rodney growls at other kids. He's like so weird and scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then Willow walks up and his face lights up.
He's
and
like,
they
hi,
have
Willow.
A friendship.
Yeah.
And she's like helping him do homework. And I love you, Willow Rosenberg. What a
sweetie. And honestly, and to me, I've known my fair share of troubled teens. Sometimes they just need a friend and someone to like treat them like a person. But I can't believe they left without him. at this field trip, and like no one had eyes on him. Like, he's literally messing with the exhibit.
Buffy does say, like, when they're wondering if Rodney is dead, and maybe it's not Buffy, but someone's like, I didn't see him get on the bus, which I was like, what kind of school is this?
Yeah, they're not checking
the kids on the bus. But then also, it's Sunnydale High, and kids are dropping like flies. So of course they're not checking the kids that go on the bus.
They can't.
They're like, we're still mourning the 6 kids that died last week. So, you know, it is what it is.
Literally.
If one dies on this field trip, consider ourselves lucky it was just one.
Oh, my God. Like, there was like a whole gang who came into the school and killed parents and teachers alike.
Last week at parent-teacher conference, we're still looking for subs based on the teachers that got murdered and were strewn on the lawn.
And that's the reason they don't have people to chaperone the field trip.
They died.
God, have I mentioned how I hate living here? Sunnydale's such a mess.
Have I ever mentioned I hate this school? But that little Willow Rodney moment, circling back on the Xander critique of it all. As I said, I feel like this is setting up Bander, and I don't like that this episode. Yeah. But in the vibe of, I do feel like a lot of Xander-isms is kind of playful, but a critique of teenage boys.
Yes, I agree.
I do think it's interesting and intentional that we are given this scene that shows that Willow is such a, like, emotionally intelligent, empathetic person, that Rodney, this little psycho freak, she is like the one person that he is kind to and feels safe around. And Xander pays no attention to her at all. And then our introduction to Oz is his band partner being like, isn't Cordelia so hot? Don't you love Cordelia? Isn't she so hot? And Oz being like, yeah, I guess, but I don't really care about that.
Yeah.
And then Oz is the one that from the stage sees Willow in the crowd and is like, who is that girl? She has a spark to her.
Bro, that's my dream. I thought that was going to happen to me at the Jonas Brothers concert.
But Xander is very much a teen boy, whereas Oz is an extremely mature teen boy.
Yeah, still a teen boy, but
Definitely mature. This is why Xander is, you know, fallen for ancient mummies and praying mantises.
Yeah.
Whereas Oz...
Yeah.
Can notice that while Willow was overlooked by all the other teen boys her age, he recognizes, no, there is something really special there that other people are not seeing.
My God, that's so awesome. I love that. I'm going to cry. When will it be my turn to be noticed from the crowd and see the spark in me? Lord. Anyway, no, I love that. Yeah, I think the Willow stuff is probably my favorite stuff that's happening here. But there's like good stuff happening in this episode. It's just like so overpowered by so much cultural insensitivity and craziness. It's like hard to remember all that fun stuff.
Outside of the slurs, the main cultural insensitivity is the cultural dance.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, even Cordelia and Xander are like speaking to these kids. They're the foreign exchange students in like broken English. Like, that's not that's not appropriate. Maybe let's not.
The dance is crazy. The dance where it's like everyone just pick a random culture and literally dress in like the cultural garb of whatever culture of your choosing.
Yeah.
That is wildly insane. And that's like a whole set piece in this episode. It's just the entire cast in whatever cultural outfit.
I was aghast at the things I was seeing. I was like, oh my God.
It's
but I mean, hey, like truly nuts. Nearly every culture is included in this, and it's bad across the board. Oh my gosh. Like, I can't even like, I don't even feel comfortable going down the line to to like say the things we even saw. I was just aghast.
No,
but even still, I mean, and I'm not the authority on like what's appreciation, what's appropriation, God knows, but I just mean like, this is like an entirely white cast and it was wild to do that and to have a dance themed like that. I was lost.
It was wild. But I like character beats in this episode.
No, yeah, I agree. And I think it is probably one of my least favorite episodes that we've seen. And I was so excited to have an episode that I felt negatively about. Because I just love this show so much. But even, I agree, like, there's so much good stuff in here. It is just, it is really overpowered by the stuff that's just not appropriate. What do you want to talk about next?
Looking at my notes. One of my notes just says, oof, the slur.
Yeah.
Oof, the slur indeed.
Which one?
Okay. Inca Mummy Girl. I don't like how a lot more to say about this episode.
Yeah.
I want to shout out Ria Lampata.
Yeah.
People die on this show every week. You know? Yeah. It's... It always
thank
happens.
God you're saying this.
This was like really harrowing and sad to me.
Genuinely upset by it.
And like, once again, literally so many kids have died on this show. Like,
something
I get
about this
it.
Is
it
sick and sick and twisted
with the territory. But him like leaving home to go on a cultural exchange program,
bro,
he was probably so excited. His family was probably so excited. And then he dies within like an hour of getting off the bus and his family never sees him again. It really was haunting to me.
And not to mention, like,
really
Buffy
haunting.
Was late to go pick him up as well.
Yeah.
So he was literally like, in my mind, he has his fingers, like his thumbs in his backpack, just excited, ready to be here, looking around, waiting for someone to finally come get him. Like, this is a boy. This is a child. I don't know how much Buffy is doing for what, like, for the people who she can't, like, what are the Watchers doing, like, to contact his family and let them know that there was an accident? Like, what is the school doing? Like, also, the school literally has his picture and his, like, information.
Yes,
they're not
little, like, a little, like, magazine with all their pictures.
And, like, it's Buffy's job to, like, take him to and from the bus. Like, it's not like a school sanctioned thing. Like, no one has fucking eyes on this kid. Oh my God, it made me sick, actually.
Yeah.
It was harrowing. I'm glad you brought it up. It, like, made me feel ill.
It made me feel very sad. I was thinking, like, this is a very, you know, it's not willy-nilly. Cultural exchange programs are serious. Like, they have your documentation. They know who you are.
Yeah.
So the fact that Buffy this whole time was like, this is a male is coming. Male is coming. Like, the sex on the document is male. And then Miss Empata walks out with her, like, yassified, has the shirt all tied up with her big long hair. And Buffy, for no second even questions it, is like, oh, absolutely, you're Empata. I was Buffy Summer says trans rights.
Exactly. She said.
Yeah. She said trans rights. So there she is. She's in the building.
She said,
hello, Empata.
They sent you here with all these boy clothes. That's not right for you, bestie. Let me give you some lipstick.
Yeah.
Like, I will help you. She said trans rights. She didn't question that at all. I love that.
Sunnydale may have no concern or regard for human life, but you better believe they said trans women are women.
They be respecting pronouns. Exactly.
Yeah, because when Empata rolled up to Sunnydale High and they
trans
said, oh, we have all this paperwork about you, but you say she, her? Well, welcome in, Miss She, her. Welcome to Sunnydale High.
Literally.
We may be on the wrong side of history as far as child mortality rates, but we are on the right side as far as gender identity.
Absolutely. Trans rights. I love that. See, and that it was totally, that is exactly the vibe I was getting to. I was like, this is beautiful. I kind of love this.
There was like no moment of Buffy being like, oh, but I thought she was just like, and Empata, glad to have you. Let's go home. Hell yeah.
Really?
Hell yeah.
I love that.
I also did, Empata was giving androgynous realness like the whole episode because she's in boy clothes the whole time.
It was beautiful. It was hot.
Her like full beat, big glam hair and like boxer shorts and a t-shirt. I was like, okay, gender
no,
fuckery diva.
No, I was loving
diva.
That. Gender fuckery diva. I know. And like, even like, you know, pants that are like, you know, straight up like men's clothes, like masculine lines on this beautiful woman. I was like, this is beautiful. Well, I loved it.
The gag of the episode is Empata original. in his little, like, you know, he wants to look nice for his new family, in his slacks white button-up shirt.
Yeah.
And then her stealing that exact look and tying the shirt up so her midriff is showing, exactly like you said. Like, men's lines on the pants and then, like, a little tied-up white
shirt.
I
love that shit.
That was the look of all looks.
No. And, like, her backlit and her gorgeous hair. I was like, I love this. And who says clothing has a gender? And I'm telling you what.
She was stunning all of them.
Stunning.
Wow.
I loved that.
Icon.
Icon. No, I loved her and I really felt for her. And, like, you know, one of my favorite parts of this episode is Buffy and Empata going, like, we see each other. We good. You know, like, and knowing that Buffy has so much empathy for her. And, you know, there's even, like, that beginning, you know, that part in the episode at the beginning where her friends are like, hey, Willow's like, I'm going to go talk to him because I don't want you to resort to violence. She's like, I don't always resort to violence. And, like, you know, to have her in the end, like, have so much empathy for this girl and to genuinely feel bad that, like, she killed her. I loved that part. I just thought it was so sweet. And, you know, this girl was chosen for no other reason than a bunch of men decided that that was what had to be. I thought that was so lovely and really sad.
No, I agree. I was going to say that's my best part of the episode, but famously that's a segment we do. So
yeah,
just kidding. It's up in the air. It could be anything.
Yeah. It could be anything. We'll see.
Hey, speaking of, do you want to move on to that segment?
Let's do it.
Okay. Worst part, best part. Lena, what was your worst part of the episode?
Just in general, I'm not going to, like, say a specific moment is my very worst part, just because I think across the board, this episode is not doing a lot for, you know, cross-cultural love. Like, it's just it's not a good look. It's not great. The two slurs, let's not be holding space for those. Like, the dance in general and, like, Xander speaking to Empata in, like, broken English, Spanglish, whatever he is doing that is not appropriate. I don't love any of that. So, obviously, that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, I wrote general cultural insensitivity.
Exactly, general cultural insensitivity.
But also, like, on top of everything else you said, also, Empata is never given a country of origin. Obviously, the mummy is from the Incan Empire.
Yeah, but it's from the Incan Empire.
Buffy never says, like, I have a cultural exchange student from Peru. It's always South America. It's giving Katie Heron is from Africa.
Yeah,
like, where in Africa? I don't know. Africa.
Like, that's not a country. That's a continent.
Which beyond, I mean, on top of turning South America into a monolith, also, they don't speak Spanish everywhere in South America.
Oh my God,
like,
exactly.
What if she had been from Brazil? The idea of, like, this entire continent is just, like, one monolith, who knows, everything's kind of the same there.
Exactly.
Just throw a dart at a map, she could be from any of those places, is not great.
Oh, yeah.
And then also the whole, like, I mean, I understand they're in a desperate scenario. Mm. A killer's on the loose. They're grasping at straws. But the whole, like, Giles meets this cultural exchange student and his first instinct is, this artifact.
That's madness.
This artifact is from, like, your general vicinity from thousands of years ago. Can you read this?
It's like, do you know them? It's like, what are you talking about? And, like, it's so funny too that they picked the right person to ask.
I know.
But, like, Empata's not going to know anything about that. Like, he's just a kid.
It's very much giving. I've met someone from South America once. Are you guys friends?
Are you guys friends?
There's, you know, multiple countries there. And also, that's from thousands of years ago. So, no. Yeah. However, she could, because it was, in fact, her.
Yeah, they threw the dart at the right target there.
Yeah.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's madness.
Crazy.
Like, come on, Giles.
Okay. What's your best part?
Ooh. Okay. I obviously love the Willow stuff, but I'm gonna shout out, I think my favorite part of the episode is when M'Pata or the Incan Princess and Xander are like underneath the stairs at the Bronze. Mm-hmm. Like, and she's crying and Jonathan just got away and it's just so gorgeous. And even watching them kiss, I was like, okay, wait, that's so beautiful. And I was getting emotional as well. And I just, you know, I also, you know, Xander's not my guy. I don't love him, but like, I, you know, to watch him like have this like the most genuine connection he's had so far and have it be so, you know, ill-fated was so sad. And I thought that that scene was so gorgeous. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was it took my breath away. What's your best part?
I liked M'Pata a lot, frankly, as a character.
I agree.
I love when Buffy makes these characters multifaceted and you understand, you have empathy for them, which is my best part, is that they make us feel empathy for M'Pata. Ultimately, she's killing people. We can't have that. But us really sitting with, this was a girl that had no choice, that had her life stolen from her. It's very much like Daryl in Some Assembly Required.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like she just wants a chance to have a human experience again after she had everything taken from her. And then Buffy relating to that and the parallels between her and Buffy, I thought was very compelling. I liked all of that.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Do you want to give us a gayest part jingle?
Oh my God. It's the gayest part of the episode. It's the gayest part today.
Whoa, okay.
That's how I write tunes. I don't know.
That was gorgeous. What's your gayest part?
Trans rights.
Hell yeah.
Trans rights for sure. And just to see a beautiful woman in a masculine line, oh my God, takes my breath away. Oh my God, I love that. What's your gayest part of the episode?
I wrote M'Pata giving androgyny realness.
Yeah! Trans women are women. I love that!
Hell yeah, baby.
I love that. Well, I love M'Pata. God, she's so beautiful.
She is. That's Inca Mummy Girl. Goodbye. Open and shut.
Well, let's open it once more to give you the death count.
Of course. Oh my gosh.
The kill count here.
Yeah.
So, obviously, fuckface Rodney.
Braceface nightmare.
I know. Honestly, I feel bad for him, but why do you do that? Whatever.
You can't just be throwing stuff in museums. You're like 16 years old. I don't
and
have
like
patience
no respect for,
it anymore. For
the dead either. That really that kind of stuff pisses me off. Cause like okay, like just like a kid who like, you know, I remember one time I went to a museum here in Utah in like elementary school. It was like a railroad museum, and I watched a kid like carve his name into like one of the slats. I don't know anything about trains, unfortunately, but like one of the wooden slats, and he got
like
in
on
so
on the track
on the track, and he got in so much trouble. And it was seriously like we all were sat down that day, and it was like we are so lucky we got to go there, and to do that is so inappropriate, and you all need to know that that's not an appropriate thing to do. Like I don't know. So I love museums. I hate someone who disrespects a museum, and especially disrespects dead bodies. I hate stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Rodney, whatever. And then obviously M'Pata. No, this one sucks. This one sucks.
Poor dude.
I know. Someone please call his mom. I really felt bad about that.
Hi.
I miss you. The bodyguard, Billy Black. I'll miss you. I love you, handsome.
Have fun in Twilight.
Have fun in Twilight. No, seriously. And then the Inca Princess, M'Pata herself. Miss you. So we got four in this episode. Well, that's open and shut. Thank you for listening to our episode on Inca Mommy Girl.
Emails. Hi, we're going to talk about some emails we got about the episode School Hard. If you want to join us on a little interweb adventure.
I hope you will. Let's first hear from Joe, shall we?
Joe's subject line is Spike's accent ... Email opens up, hey my loves, it's not good. Or at least not consistently. I actually couldn't work out if it was an American doing a bad English accent or an English actor doing a bad American accent. Some words sound good, but then it's very far off. I actually think it swings into southern U.S. at times, so I was intrigued to hear that that's what he auditioned as. Anyway, very much enjoying the Buffy rewatch, been looking for a reason to go again. First saw 11 years ago when I was a depressed first-year uni student and watched it in such a concentrated time period that I started subconsciously doing the Willow gurgly nose breathing sound, which stuck for months. Sorry to burst the Spike accent bubble. I actually prefer Drusilla's Victorian orphan voice. Lots of love, Joe UK. International listener!
To call a Victorian orphan is very fun.
Now, the star of this week's email haul is the accent discourse. Mm-hmm. We said last week, we said that we were both gagged to learn that James Marsters was American, pardon me, and that we were both like, oh my gosh, the accent to end all accents, but obviously we're American, so like we don't have the je ne sais quoi. We don't have that little thing that helps us understand British accents well, that course. Little thing being raised in England.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of Brits weigh in. Joseph is a point against. I will say, friend of the podcast, Vicky commented and said, I watched the show for the first time 2 years ago and refused to even Google a single name. I didn't want spoilers. Mm-hmm. So I binged it and then looked up who everyone was. I had no idea James Marsters wasn't British. I'm British. He sounds so much like my ex and his dad, kind of North London Cockney. So we got Joe against and we got Vicky for. We got a foot on each side. Now, we got another Brit weighing in.
Well, let's hear something from Des, shall we?
Hello, Ian and Lena. I'm writing in as a British listener as requested to discuss the accents of two of the most incredible characters to ever grace our screens. It is possible that other British listeners would disagree with me for this, but I will say Spike's accent is overall not that bad. I wouldn't praise it maybe quite as much as you both did, but it's but it's definitely passable.
That's so funny.
A little hammed up, but that kind of just goes with the character. I was very young when I watched Buffy, and I think I did believe to some degree that James Marsters was British. This was reinforced when I later saw him in the Doctor Who spinoff Torchwood, where he also plays English.
Oh my god, yeah.
If you haven't seen Torchwood, I strongly recommend it. James Marsters only appears in series 2 and honestly plays a very similar character to Spike, only less goth and more horny. You were, of course, correct about Drusilla's accent. It is jaw-droppingly, awe-inspiringly bad, and I love every minute of it. The other question which came up was whether Spike and Drusilla count as British white trash, and if there is a term for British white trash. I would say that the closest thing I can think of here would be chav. However, chav has kind of fallen out of vogue due to general tones of classism. Mm. And also, I would not describe Spike and Drusilla as chavs or white trash. They are just grungy London punk rocker types, as you stated, with the Sid and Nancy parallel. Just to round off with some general gushing, I've been an avid listener of the pod since about 2022 during the Glee days, and I was so happy when you decided to carry on and do Buffy because, in all honesty, I care about Buffy way more than I could ever care about Glee. No offense, Ryan Murphy. I am so flipping excited to dig into season 2, but even more so to get to certain juicy events in later seasons. I love and hate that you're doing no spoilers for the newbies and thus edging the longtime Buffy fans in the audience. Honestly, it's God's work, and I'm so glad to have a weird parasocial relationship with you both. Hope you both have a great week. Blessings. Des, Brighton, UK. International
listeners! Love edging. Sorry.
I love to, if there's one thing you know about us, is that we love to edge. This is
we
an
love
edging podcast.
To edge.
This is actually a podcast about edging.
Welcome to Slay.
An edging podcast.
A queer edging podcast.
A queer edging podcast. So we have Joe, who's very strongly against Spike's accent. Mm-hmm. We have Vicky, who is pro Spike's accent. And we have Des, who seems to be like, Des's stance seems to be like, I clock that he's American.
Yes.
But it not in a way that like bothers me or like takes me out of it.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
So maybe that's a different category. Or maybe a point towards.
So maybe it's a three-way tie.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. Jury's still out. Is James Marsters British? He could be. We'll never
the world
know.
May never know. Let's hear from another listener, shall we? Oh, but also, I haven't been saying thank you. Thank you to everyone who sent us emails. Thank you, Des. Up next, we've got a message from Maya.
Hi, Lena and Ian. My name is Maya, and I'm from London.
International listener!
I just wanted to say that you guys intrigued me since day one when the Gleanessence was happening. Your love of musicals and TV shows and pop culture immediately got me hooked. So when I heard you mentioning Buffy and how you thought about doing a Buffy podcast, let me tell you, I was excited. Since I'm one of the few people who are in that small Glee stan and Buffy stan Venn diagram. It's really interesting how different your discussions of Glee Season 1 and Buffy Season 1 are. Especially with how critically acclaimed seasons 1 and 2 of Glee are, you still had so many problems with that show's writing and characters that I agree with. Then to compare it to Buffy Season 1, which is universally panned, you've had nothing but praise for. To that I say, keep it up! Of course, criticism is valid, but it's actually refreshing to see people being so positive online about TV shows once in a while. I also wanted to mention that when you called Sheila and that me-pie-nonce Spike and Drew, but white trash, you then came to the conclusion that Spike and Drew were British white trash, but you didn't know what British white trash was. I'm here to tell you right now. The two words that are the near equivalent of British white trash are chavs.
Shout out.
And roadmen. Chad is usually used to describe women and roadman to men, but they are both slang used to describe lower class white people who try to act tough and aggressive but are really trashy and foolish here in England. Now, chav / roadmen are longtime slang words, but they do have some negative connotations. Mm. Firstly, if not used in the right context, these words could be used to describe every lower class British person as one monolith, and that's pretty derogatory. Secondly, there's also the case that when someone calls another American white trash, you picture a southern redneck who has a MAGA hat. Whereas chav / roadman, we in the UK picture a white person wearing hoop earrings and heavy makeup, wearing baggy clothes, and sometimes speaking in broken AAVE. Basically, they're culture vultures who try to cosplay black culture to seem more threatening, and that's bad. Mm. But yeah, that's the term. I hope I explained that properly. I don't know how to finish off my email after that, but bye.
I love that. This is interesting. Ooh. We're learning. Every day's a school day, brother. This is very interesting.
This culture exchange we're having mm-hmm. with England right now.
Yeah.
I agree with the general sentiment that people have said in that I don't think that Spike and Drew actually fit into what we were talking about. Sheila and Meat Pie.
I can see that too.
Although, like, I don't know that Sheila and Meat Pie are classically like...
No.
The world may never know.
The world may never know. And everyone, I think this is good. I think we all get our own opinion. I think that's slay. I think that's slay Queer Buffy podcast. Thank you so much for being so nice about how we talk about Buffy. And listen to this. If we had to redo Glee, I don't know that we would be as critical anymore.
Oh, I really agree with that.
I think that's just you and I's different attitudes now. I think we're coming into it with an open heart now.
And I also, I have a thing about me. I've talked about this before where like, if something is getting too much praise, I'm like, I actually now need to point out what's wrong with this. And then if something is getting too much criticism, I'm like, I need to prove out what's good about this. It's like some stupid contrarian, like I need to prove I'm the smartest person in the room thing. And so I think that is part of it, is that Glee Season 1 and 2 are just so, frankly, rightfully so.
Yeah, of course.
Are like so beloved that my knee-jerk reaction is like, well, what about this, this, and this?
Yeah.
And then with Buffy, I have to be like, you guys don't get it. Season 1's actually good. Like, there's good stuff going on.
I totally get that. I also feel like, just for me personally, like, you know, I'm more comfortable admitting that I like things and admitting that, you know, that things can be bad about it, but I don't, that doesn't like negate my good feelings towards it. So now, especially like, and also like, life is too hard. Like, let me have some fun. My God.
I do agree. I feel like if we were to cover Glee today, we would be much kinder to it.
Honestly, even listening to the pilot, when we listened back to the pilot, I was like, Jesus Christ, we're coming in hot.
Goodness sakes.
Yeah,
what's your issue?
If we had to redo it, there is 100% no way we would be as critical as we were. There's no way.
Well, I even remember watching Buffy live. There are certain things that I remember being like, this is stupid. And then watching it now, being like, what was my issue? Also watching Buffy live. I didn't watch it live. Watching Buffy as a teen. Yes.
I also feel like, I don't know, like the older I get and the more I read and the more I watch movies and the more I like, you know, obviously that I think that can make a person more critical, but I also feel like I'm also recognizing why things are put in place. And while I might not enjoy it 100%, I still like, I'm seeing what they're trying to tell me. I'm like kind of becoming more aware of story structure and the like, if that makes sense. But thank you for enjoying. I'm glad you enjoyed Glee and you're enjoying this with us too.
I can't remember where we got this message. I don't know if it was an email that accidentally got like erased or if it was like a DM or something. I don't remember where it is, but we did get another British person, and I wish I could shout you out, but once again I can't track down the message, that said that in their opinion, Spike's accent was convincing when he had the prosthetics on.
I remember seeing that.
Yes. But then as soon as it's just James Marsters' face, you can tell he's American.
Yeah.
So I do feel like the eyes have it in that you can tell he's American. But I was still gagged.
I found it. It's on Patreon.
Okay. It's on Patreon.
It was Danny. As a Brit, Spike's accent is better than Drew's. I didn't buy hers for a second. Initially, I bought that Spike's actor was British until he was out of vamp face. Admittedly, by that point, I'd Googled it. I think Spike's accent is better with vamp teeth than it is when he is looking human. But maybe that's just me. This is the only episode I've seen so far, so I'll keep you posted. Oh my gosh, please keep us posted.
You're going to trick yourself into believing he's British and that we have been gaslighting you and Google.
That's the thing. And God knows we are not. we don't get a vote. We don't get a vote. Maya, thank you so much for your email. Up next, let's hear from Carson.
Hi, Ian and Lena. Longtime Gleek and first time Buffy watcher here. I have really enjoyed the show so far, and it's so fun to continue to hear you guys gushing about a topic you love so much. Your energy is infectious. Also, the fashion in the show is iconic. When watching School Hard, something has really tickled me that I need to share with y'all. When the vamps are attacking the school, Giles tells Xander to sneak out the back and go get Angel. My question is, where does this man live? Does Xander know his address? And how would he know how to get there? Is he going and knocking on his front door? I think that would have been a hilarious scene building up the relationship between Angel and Xander. Then I watched ahead to the next episode, and Willow tells Giles to call Angel to help investigate what's going on. Do they even have his number? Do we think he has answering machine messages? It seems he is always appearing from the ether, and the thought of him answering a landline phone is almost too humanizing. Interested in hearing your thoughts on this silly little idea. I'm loving the pod, and I'm excited to continue watching Carson, she, her, Carson.
I love this.
These are the questions we're going to be talking about.
Absolutely.
This is a very important thing that no one is discussing, which is, does Angel have a landline?
Yeah, like, did he have to go into, like, a phone company and set that shit up?
Yeah.
Probably.
What's his ID say?
What does his ID say?
Hello?
Do you think there's a fake dealer?
I think he has a fake ID for like vamps. Yeah. Honestly, genuinely, I think there's probably a vamp dealer. In the larger Buffyverse, there are so many like humans that interact with demons on a kind of like business level.
Oh my God, yeah.
That I would absolutely
The cops are involved. Hello. Honestly, and this is coming from someone who like didn't have a fake ID, didn't have my first sip of alcohol until I was 21. But I think it's also like, I've heard pretty easy to get a fake ID. So I'm sure there's like someone to give him a fake ID. Yeah. I don't know.
As far as where he lives, Xander does know where he lives because Xander went to his apartment in Prophecy Girl and famously said, mind if I come in, and then burst right in to rub an Angel's face. He doesn't need permission. But how did he know where Angel lived in Prophecy Girl?
No, seriously.
Because
he's giving stalker vibes.
Buffy's never been to his place, as far as we've seen. He just shows up at her place. I think Angel has a calling card. He has a little business card.
Oh,
that
yeah,
when he vanishes, he just
he's
drops
like Tuxedo
it on the floor.
Mask. He's like Tuxedo Mask from Sailor Moon. He like throws a rose down, but instead he ninja stars a calling card down.
Exactly that. Every time they're like talking and they turn around and Angel's gone and they're like, oh, he left another fucking calling card on the ground. He's to his landline. Yeah, and then it's
to his landline.
Like, hi, you've reached Angel the Vampire. Please leave a message.
It's also like, what kind of landline did he get? Does he have like, does he still have a rotary phone? Does he have one that's like attached to the wall? Does he have like a little like contact card on top of the landline? Like with like emergency contact information and like need to know numbers?
Do you think he has a gag answering machine where he's like, hello? Hello? Oh, sorry, my God, I can't hear you.
He's such a jerk.
Oh, I can't hear you because I forgot to answer the phone. Leave a message at the sound of the beep.
I'm so mad, you guys. You don't even know. Carson, this email was so fun. And you're asking the right questions. Thank you. Up next, we've got a message from Lauren.
This message is titled, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I love y'all so dearly, but I've got a very, very urgent question. Where is When She Was Bad, She Was Horrid, and We Loved It from? Is that a Recovering Gleek original? I listened to When She Was Bad recently and have been quoting this literally constantly. I've begun a cross stitch with this miraculous message. I've started discussions about how incredible it is that a classic poet would write such a thing. I looked up the real poem 10 minutes ago and have been crying laughing ever since. After fully believing that Ian called my favorite genre, bad but fun, bee movies, as in the insect bee, you'd think I would learn to Google things before sharing. I just had to share that. But in all seriousness, y'all are incredible. I had never watched Glee until I listened through season 2 of Recovering Gleek, and that's also when I started Buffy after hearing y'all hype it up. Lastly, The Pack is my favorite episode so far. I'm sorry. The dormant 7th grader inside me loves Xander in it. She's toxic. Stay tuned for the finalized cross stitch. Love, oh my God. Lauren from Louisiana.
Please send us a picture. Lauren,
I don't know what version of that poem you looked up. Because in the original version, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow does say, When She Was Bad, She Was Horrid, and We Loved It.
Yeah, that's a direct quote.
That's a direct quote from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I think maybe you were like on a, it's like a mistranslation, like it got translated to something else and then back to English. I don't know. No, that's.
No, it's just us. We're being
It's
silly.
When She Was Bad, She Was Horrid. It reminds me of episode 5 of this podcast. We talked about The Road's Not Taken.
Yeah.
And we consistently, the entire episode, A, refer to the Glee episode as The April Road's Not Taken, which is not the title of the episode.
Not the title.
And then refer to the Robert Frost poem as The April Road's Not Taken, which is not what that poem is called. It does not say that at all.
See, okay. And that is so, that's one of my favorite things to do with you specifically, is to make a
just
joke
lie.
And so very earnestly keep going.
And that's, it is the Ayo Edebiri quote where she's like, I think my favorite kind of joke is just a lie. Like, there's just something that tickles me so badly about saying something ridiculous and then just moving forward as
the way
if
that she
it
has
is
said,
reality.
I'm the goat. I'm the donkey from Banshees of Inisherin, and like fully earnestly. It's like, well, yeah.
And also like leaned into being Irish so hard that now Ireland
she's
like
on
accepts
list. Yes!
Her exactly.
Oh my God, I love that girl. My
but no,
God.
The poem is When She Was Bad, She Was Horrid, and we loved the episode, and so therefore, and we loved it.
And we loved it. Hey. I love that though. Please send me a picture. That is so far up my alley. You have no idea. I'm obsessed. It was such a thrilling email to receive.
And I do think the cross stitch is better for it.
Yeah, my God.
I'm obsessed with that. I also want to see the finished cross stitch. I think it's going to be fabulous.
And also, I hope I can be, you know, when I was bad, I was horrid. And we can love it. You know what I mean? I hope we all can be bad and horrid and we love it.
Isn't that what you want out of life? Is to be, is that when you're bad, you're horrid and everyone loves it. What more could you want out of
what
life?
What more could you want?
Come on. Well, something more that we could want is for y'all to keep sending us emails. Ding.
Ding.
Love you can send
guys.
Us emails at recoveringgleek@gmail.com. We love to get the emails. Truly,
yes,
this was an influx this week.
Yeah.
We were thrilled. I loved every time a new email came in. Thank you to all of you who wrote in.
And thanks for teaching us so much. I feel like I really went to school today. I love that.
Yes, that's the other thing. One, I just love to hear from listeners no matter what. But also, like, Lena and I have had very similar life experiences.
Yeah.
And so I love to get a perspective that means so much more than ours on a certain topic. Like, 100%. Does James Marster sound British? Like,
yes.
We can talk until we're blue in the face, but it means 2% as much as an actual British person's thoughts 100%. On the topic.
Yeah.
So please keep
Thank
emailing
you guys.
In. And now back to your regular scheduled programming. Bye.
Bye. You can follow us on Instagram. If you're not following us on Instagram, what the hell is going on? Do you just not have an Instagram?
Hello.
Why don't you follow us? Please let us know. We're at @RGPresents_podcast.
You don't follow us on Instagram. Please message us and tell us why.
Yeah, please go to our Instagram page, hit DM, and let us know why. No,
and
actually,
then
don't.
While you're there, click follow.
Drop a follow. What are you doing?
Yeah, come on.
Anyway,
it's free.
We post memes, we post fun clips, and we'll also do that on Instagram as well, or excuse me, TikTok as well. We are at @RGPresents_podcast there as well. If you want, you can support us on Patreon. We do monthly bonus episodes. We have fun. We sometimes, you'll get the episodes a week early all the time. That's not sometimes, that's all the time. I don't know why this is so hard for me literally every time. Like, I don't say the same shit. Like, nothing changes. Like, what the hell? I wish I had a speech. Ugh. But we have two tiers. And for our top tier of the podcast, our Best Friends of the Podcast, you get a little special shout out. And it's my turn to give you a shout out. So here I go, giving you a shout out because I love you. Thank you, patrons. We genuinely could not do it without you. Here's a Patreon thank you to Emily, Sonia, Aaron, Olivia, Morgs, Ida, Jack, Karis, Elizabeth, Depressed Bubbles, Eden, Nikki Cowboy Emoji, Brianna, JP, Tanya, Catherine, Shannon, Rachel, Drew, Christine, Kayleen, Rachel, Allison, Megan, Audrey, Alexandra, Kylie, Dustin, Azza, Jaden, Paul, Julia, Vicky, Keely, Yasmin, Willie, Danica, Shalane, Diagonal Toast, Kay, Reagan, Pee Pee Poo Poo, Josette, Joe, Lo, Madeline, Alani, Elise, Blanton, Alice, Paige, Nadia, Nicole, Abby, Kristen, Story, Eileen, Mallory, Samantha, Rebecca, Layla, Ari, Marissa, Taylor, Frankie, Margaret, Despina, Emily, Phoebe, Aria, Eva, Haley, Emily, Jacqueline, Elsie, Laszlo, Ray, Emma, Steph, Charlie, Kelsey, Thomas, Chucho, Brittany, Kenzie, Michael, Katie, Elizabeth, and Freddie. Thank you all so much. I love you guys. Have a great rest of your week. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Oh my God.
Whoa. If you like this podcast, please rate and review it and share it with everyone you ever met and shout out from the rooftops. And make your whole personality. We'll see you next week when we talk about Reptile Boy, an episode I'm not kidding, I remember nothing about. I couldn't tell you a single thing about Reptile Boy. This will be as if I'm watching it for the first time. I don't
Are
remember
you serious?
At all. Hey!
You're kidding. This episode is imprinted on my brain.
I
think about it all the time.
No memory. This is, at this point, the first episode where I have no concept of what happens in it.
Love you guys. Have a great rest of your day. Here is a kiss on your forehead if you want it. Consensual forehead kisses to you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Follow us at @RecoveringGleek_podcast. Email us at recoveringgleek@gmail.com. Join our Patreon, patreon.com/recoveringgleek. Rate and review us and tell your friends, please. Did you ever have a foreign exchange student?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not in my home. No, not in my home, but like at school for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, I had them at school.
You got so excited at the idea of me.
Because it was thrilling to consider.
Yeah, I never did. No. Nope.
I easily could have just, like, told my parents, like, hey, I think this would be cool. I also, like, think it would have been fun for me to do it somewhere.
Yeah.
Would you ever want to do that?
Oh, my God, yeah. Of course. Well, if you live in another country, you want to house us, let us know. But don't send a mummy to kiss me at the bus stop.
Uh-uh.
Don't do
thank
it.
You. I've learned my lesson.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.